How will Amazon maintain its culture as it prepares for its founder, Jeff Bezos, to step down as CEO? One answer is the set of processes and principles that the company has put into place, the invention machine created by Bezos and his leadership team.
People look at Amazon and they're impressed by the fact that it is such an innovative company. And they think about that in terms of its innovation, in terms of the products they have built. But what they don't really think about is the company being innovative in terms of the way it actually manages and operates.
That's the assessment of Bill Carr, a former Amazon executive and the co-author of the new book, Working Backwards, with fellow Amazon veteran Colin Breyer.
I firmly believe that one of the biggest legacies of the company is likely to be their contribution to management science.
Beyond providing a blueprint for others, he predicts that Amazon's processes and principles will enable the company to continue to thrive and innovate for decades after Jeff Bezos' departure. On this special episode of the GeekWire podcast, Bill Carr discusses the new book, describes Amazon's unique approaches, and shares inside stories, including the offhand remark made by the late Apple CEO Steve Jobs that contributed to the creation of some of Amazon's most important products and services. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop. Our guest on the show this week is Bill Carr, who spent more than 15 years at Amazon as a vice president who launched the company's digital music and video businesses, including Amazon Music, Prime Video, and Amazon Studios. He's the former COO of OfferUp and a former executive in residence at venture capital firm Maveron. And more to the point of our conversation today, he's the author, with fellow Amazon veteran Colin Breyer, of the new book, Working Backwards: Insights, Stories, and Secrets from Inside Amazon. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me on the show. Pleasure to be here.
So I'm really enjoying the book, learning a lot from it, and it really is a blueprint in many ways for how Amazon works. And I recognize a lot of the folks who will be listening will have never worked at Amazon. Some of them will have worked at Amazon, given our audience here in Seattle. So I'm curious, did you have any aha moments in the course of researching this book where you just said to yourself, dang, I wish I had known that when I was there at Amazon? And if so, what were they?
Well, you know, Colin and I wrote this book because, well, we actually knew most of this stuff already. So it was not so much a research effort as, 85% of this sort of poured out of our minds from our combined 27 years of history. And we were fortunate enough that we sort of covered different ground at the company. And so by putting that together, we hopefully came up with what we think is a fairly complete picture. But I think the big aha moment was there was this early stage of, this is the first time I tried to write a book. And we had this general idea, which was to answer the question of like, how does Amazon do it? How have they managed to actually go from being a, albeit, relatively successful e-commerce company back in the early 2000s to this highly diversified company that is in so many different and diverse businesses today, everything from cloud computing to digital media to devices to e-commerce to third-party logistics. How do they do that? And we knew a lot of what we wanted to write about, but then when we actually got very serious about that and tried to figure that out, we realized that actually distilling that and defining it in a way to make it accessible to someone who's never worked at Amazon was, not the simple feat we thought it was going to be. And so the journey, the aha for us was the journey of going through that process, not unlike the process we would go through at Amazon to figure out what is this product? Here's this general idea of this business we want to go attack and build for. Well, what should we build? And so it was that journey of iterating on that and working through it to actually come up with this way of boiling it down to that we call the invention machine, which, we can talk more about in this podcast. But that was really the big aha, is like, how do we actually distill it down to a set of repeatable, scalable processes that any company can use?
So you mentioned the invention machine, and that's one of the phrases that I think people hear about Amazon, and unless they've worked there or have been deeply involved in what the company does, may not fully understand. Others include day one, single-threaded leader, customer obsession. But of course, the big one, the title of the book, is Working Backwards. What is Working Backwards? How does it play out? And what are the most common pitfalls that people run into when they try to implement it?
Yeah, so working backwards refers to sort of a way of thinking at Amazon as well as a specific process. So for many years, the process I'm going to describe in a minute actually didn't exist. And I joined the company in 1999. And for these first 5 years, Jeff Bezos would often talk about the idea of we need to start with the customer, work backwards from there. And what that meant was that to, you know, really build great products, we needed to be not focused on our own internal wants and desires, or our own skills, or what our competitors were doing, but we needed to act to focus purely and clearly on what customers wanted or needed, and then to figure out how to go build that. Later in 2004, we actually developed a specific process to reinforce that concept, which is now known at Amazon as the working backwards PR FAQ process, where PR stands for press release and FAQ stands for frequently asked questions. And the way this process works, simply put, is that you, when you're developing a new product at Amazon, you start by writing the press release. And normally, when you're developing a new product, that actually comes at the end of the process. So the engineering and product teams have gone and, you know, built something that they may have spent months or years doing so. And at the very end, perhaps in a traditional company, then you bring the PR team and the marketing team into the loop and they say, okay, you need to figure out how to sell this thing. And they'll go write a press release to figure that out. And when they write that press release, they would then try to very carefully identify all the ways in which this product would be really appealing to customers. The problem is if you do it the traditional way and you're at that point in the process after you've already built it, figuring out, okay, why is this really going to appeal to customers? At that point, you may have several ahas to say, aha, well, to make this really appeal to the customer, this device would need to be able to fit in your pocket, or would need to be below a certain price point, or would need to be always connected to the internet. But if you hadn't actually done any of those things during the product development process, then, well, it's too late now because you're at the launch. So the idea is instead is to actually think about all those things upfront and think about this idealized customer product. Think about actually like what, by the way, is the problem you're trying to solve for the customer, and then have clear statements of how you're trying to, what this product is that you would solve it. And while you're doing that, you actually suspend worrying about the actual skills and capabilities of your company and suspend thinking about some of the maybe technical hurdles or business model hurdles you'd have to overcome to do it. And so ideally what you've written here in this press release is a product that if someone read this press release, they'd say, aha, I'm going to jump out of my chair. I can't wait to buy that product.
As you said, this is the PR FAQ, the six pager as it's known. And
right.
This is the reason that meetings at Amazon start in silence.
Yes, it is one of them. Yes. And so, cause the first page of this is PR. And then afterwards you can use other pages to then address what are called FAQs, frequently asked questions. And these would be the questions, more detailed questions that customers would ask or the press would ask, but also more importantly, detailed questions that would address actual constraints and hurdles that you're going to encounter when you build this product. You may not have even figured out all the different solutions to the hurdles, but you use the FAQ to sort of work backwards to say, okay, now that I've come up with this ideal product, now how could I actually make this real? Because maybe I have this technical problem I'll have to solve, or maybe there's a business model problem I'll have to solve, or maybe I'll require a certain partnership. And then you would describe the ways in which you would come up with either novel or specific approaches to solve those problems. So yes, it's a document, it's a written document. And yes, to a meeting at Amazon to review and discuss a new product idea, people would hand out this PR FAQ document. People would read it in silence for 15 to 20 minutes. And then you go around the room and have a discussion.
What is the importance of doing that versus having a PowerPoint? Because I know PowerPoints are essentially forbidden in this context at Amazon. Why?
Yes. Important note that what is forbidden is the idea of using PowerPoint in internal meetings at Amazon as a means to make important decisions, to give important business updates. So most internal meetings are document-based rather than PowerPoint-based. PowerPoint is still used if you're meeting with a third party or got an all-hands meeting with 1,000 people, then sure, you still use PowerPoint. But the reason why Amazon moved away from PowerPoint to written documents, written narratives in meetings is back in 2004, when my co-author Colin Breyer was Jeff's shadow or technical assistant or chief of staff in most companies. He was spending every hour of every day in during the business day with Jeff, trailing him to meetings and helping to figure out how to make these meetings more productive. And they had a lot of discussions about that. And after one particularly difficult set of meetings where it didn't seem like we were really making much progress, they decided to come up with a solution to that problem. They'd been reading Edward Tufte, and Tufte writes about the ways in which PowerPoint helps the author gloss over important details, doesn't allow the author to point out the interconnectedness of certain facts, and introduces, frankly, some bias into meetings and decision-making because a great presenter could maybe make a bad idea look good, and a bad presenter might make a great idea not look as good as it is. So Jeff made the decision to say, hey, let's try using narrative written documents at meetings instead of PowerPoint. And the benefits turned out to be, you know, first of all, it's a lot harder to write a good business memo, a good business document than it is to make a PowerPoint because you can't skip over any facts or details. You have to really think through the matter, understand the issue at a much deeper level to communicate it in a written document. Number two, it really forces people to be clear and concise. So anyone who's really tried to boil down an issue to a few pages that's very complicated knows just how hard that is. But in doing so, the author and the team that's working on that actually get much smarter and get a bit, much better understanding of the issue they're wrestling with. And it's also a much more efficient means of communication. So you can read 7 to 8 times faster than you can listen to someone speaking. And the information density in a Word document is also about 10x higher than it would be in a PowerPoint. So there's actually a greater information transmission per minute that's occurring in a meeting with a Word document than with PowerPoint. And then finally, what I would add is that it then inverts the meeting from spending 45 minutes to 40 minutes of a herky-jerky delivery of information where people get interrupted and it's disjointed, and then maybe squeeze in 15 to 20 minutes at the end for conversation. Instead, you have a clear 20-minute, uninterrupted, non-herky-jerky transmission of information where everyone can kind of get the whole picture before there's any conversation. And then you allow 40 minutes for a good conversation, debate, discussion to arrive at good decisions. So simply put, Amazon experimented with this and decided this is just a much better way to conduct meetings.
In the book, you write that a common mistake of people new to this process is when others stop reading to say, okay, now let me go over what you just read. That's not the way it's supposed to work.
No. There's no, if you are the owner, the author, you and your team are the one presenting in the meeting, so to speak, you pass out the document at the beginning of the meeting, people read it. You don't then, once people are finished, give some sort of verbal recap or some sort of mini PowerPoint pitch of it. That's not how it works. People have taken detailed notes and reading the document, you simply go around the room and people, based on their notes, ask questions and make comments.
One of the nuggets that stood out to me in the book was that Jeff Bezos is typically among the last to finish reading. What does that say to you about him and his approach to the company?
I don't think it says that he's a slow reader. Jeff's probably actually a pretty fast reader, but he's a very deliberate reader. So one of the important things that Jeff communicated about how he reads these documents is that what he learned is to sort of read each sentence in the document and then think about it and try to think about to disprove the truth of that sentence and sort of to satisfy himself as to whether he believed that, you know, we could accept that sentence as truth or not. And which means he's thinking very deeply about every word, every sentence in the document and analyzing it to decide whether, you know, he actually agrees with that or think that the facts presented in that sentence or document actually lead to the conclusions that are presented as well, or maybe lead him to different conclusions. And I've seen this insightfulness up front, up close and personal over more than a decade of being in meetings with Jeff and having him review many, many documents, some my own, some by many other teams. And he has a remarkable ability to deliver different insights than others in the room, even though the others in the room are very smart, capable executives, to come up with novel insights and novel ways of looking at things. And his careful inspection of these documents is really a testament to how he and the company are able to actually manage such diverse businesses by having such attention to detail and be able to reach into the depths across so many different businesses.
We're talking with Bill Carr, who is the co-author with Colin Breyer of the new book, Working Backwards, Insights, Stories, and Secrets from Inside Amazon. We'll be right back with more. You're listening to GeekWire.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop. It's a special episode of the GeekWire podcast with Bill Carr, the co-author of the new book, Working Backwards. Bill, you and your co-author, Colin Breyer, worked at the company for many years in leadership positions. Why did you decide to write this book?
Well, we decided to write this book for a few reasons. Number one was we had heard, whether it was the press, friends and acquaintances at cocktail parties, or more importantly, I was actually at an offsite retreat of CEOs when I was at Maveron. And so a room full of CEOs, along with one or two veteran Fortune 50 CEOs. And the topic of Amazon came up. And one of these veteran CEOs said, Amazon, I don't know how Amazon does it. How have they been able to be so successful, such a diverse set of businesses, when we're still trying to figure out our core business? And I realized at that moment that I knew the answer to that question. And that if this CEO was wondering what the answer was to that question, that there was some value in that. Colin and I, you know, I related this conversation to him, and I realized that based on our respective experiences, that we knew the answer. And the reason is because what we believe is the answer to that question is a set of repeatable processes that Amazon developed that in many ways are just as innovative as the products that the company built and innovated in the same period of time. And this all happened in this narrow window of time between 2003 and 2006. And at that time, you know, Colin and I were in positions where we were working closely with Jeff and the other senior leaders of the company. And we had a front row seat to the development of these specific processes and practices. So we decided that we thought it would be great to make these accessible to the rest of the business world and to really enable the next generation of business leaders to learn from all of the challenges that we encountered and to pass off some of the novel solutions that we came up to those problems.
And you and Colin also co-founded a company called Working Backwards. And I know that you coach and advise companies and executives on some of these principles. Should everybody just adopt these principles to make the business world hum, or are these just uniquely and peculiar to Amazon?
Well, I would never argue that everyone should use these processes and principles. There are a lot of great ways to run a company. And in fact, we all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. So when I was in business school, you know, we studied, to date myself, back in the early 90s, we would study the management practices of Japanese companies or GE or Procter & Gamble and the other greats who had come up with very specific contributions to management science. And when I was at Amazon, Jeff and the senior leadership team were students of this history as well. And some of the companies that influenced Jeff in particular were Toyota. There were a few different processes that either influenced us or we adopted, you know, straight away from Toyota, since they were so well known for quality and operational excellence. But we didn't adopt them all. But the beauty of the processes that we describe in this book are that they really can work for any kind of company. They can work for a really small startup. They can work for one of the largest companies in the world. They can work for a B2B company, a company that makes hardware devices, a company that's in e-commerce. And the proof point of that is that Amazon has been all of those things, because we implemented these processes when businesses like AWS and digital media and devices were, you know, started at zero, and they're still in place today. And they were also in place at the e-commerce business. And now that these businesses are tens of billions, hundreds of billions in size, they're still in place. So They can really work for anyone, but we've tried to make them accessible so that any CEO, any business leader out there can either learn from them and, you know, take some bits and pieces to apply in their business, or in fact, literally take these processes and implement them in their company if they wish to.
It strikes me that this should be required reading, or perhaps in the welcome package for every single Amazon employee. I can't think of a better introduction to the company for somebody who's going to be working there. And one of my questions for you was going to be, can the principles in this book scale at a company with more than 1 million people? But I imagine you would say the leadership principles and the principles in this book are the reason the company is able to scale.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So simply put, what we describe in this book is what we call the Amazon invention machine. And that machine is a combination of the 14 Amazon leadership principles and how those leadership principles are knit into or connect into a set of 5 scalable, repeatable processes, one for hiring, one for how the company conducts meetings, one for how the company develops new products, how they organize teams, and how they track metrics. And the point that we endeavor to make in the book is that Jeff and the senior leadership team of Amazon sought to specifically actually figure out and come up with these processes and the leadership principles in order so that the company could scale to a relatively, you know, infinite size. What every early stage CEO who's gone through a period of growth knows and understands is that when they were first started the company and there were, say, fewer than 30 people in their on their team, and every morning they could have a stand up and every different piece of how the company was run they could be involved in. Well, once the company gets over, say, 100 people, 125 people, and then starts growing like a weed to 200, 500, 1,000, they lose control. They can't be in every meeting anymore. They can't be part of every decision. And so what should they do about that? And what Jeff decided to do about that was to say, well, how do I create a set of leadership principles that will allow all those people to have a set of guiding principles to allow them to make the right decisions so that they would think through the same lens that I use when I'm trying to make decisions? And then furthermore, how do I come up with a set of processes that reinforce the way we make specific decisions? Like, how do we make sure we're hiring the right people that are right for our company? And how do we make sure that when we develop new products, we start with the customer work backwards? Or how do we make sure that we are focused on customer-facing controllable input metrics, not output metrics like revenue? And so these specific processes were developed in order to facilitate and enable Jeff to effectively have his mindset and the way that he works and thinks extend to the company, you know, sort of an infinitely horizontal and vertical way.
I've covered the company now since 2002 in various forms as a journalist and an editor. And the thing that has always struck me about the leadership principles is that they can be so focused, which obviously is hallmark of successful businesses, is their ability to focus, but they're so focused on the customer that sometimes the tangential impacts of the company can fall by the wayside. In other words, the collateral damage of some of what it might do. I know there's been lots of discussion of what should be the 15th leadership principle, and there's been a push to have diversity reflected among the leadership principles. I actually would propose one that I'd love to get your feedback on, and that would be empathy for those impacted by the actions of the company who may not be customers. And I'm thinking of partners, retailers. I'm writing about a community in Northern California right now that's getting a distribution center and sort of grappling with the implications of on their roads. What do you think of that leadership principle proposal, Bill?
Well, these are good questions. And, you know, I left Amazon 6 years ago and I joined the company 22 years ago. And so the company that I joined was awfully small compared to the one that it is today. And there's no doubt that the kinds of issues that any large institution, you know, faces become very different once it becomes a large institution. Obviously, they have a greater impact on their communities, a greater impact on the planet, and people who have very different thoughts about then what are the responsibilities of large institutions. this is actually not really the within the scope of A, the book that, that we wrote, and B, you know, I left the company 6 years ago, so it would be an opinion of one. You know, what I've tried to share is how can I help other companies and other leaders, the next generation of business leaders who have an idea, you know, in their home, they want to bring that idea to the world. How can they learn from what Amazon has done so that they can do that too?
And to your point, these were not necessarily handed down upon the founding of the company. They were not like Moses and the Ten Commandments or something. It was organic. They were formalized in writing in 2004. And one of the phrases that informally accompanies them sometimes is, quote, unless you know better ones.
Yeah.
So they're malleable.
Yeah. And the unless you know better was another way of saying, look, we, the senior leadership team of the company, have spent a lot of time sweating and thinking about and developing these leadership principles. But if you meaning anyone in the company, has a suggestion for how to make one of these principles better, how to add a new one, we are all ears. Now, I can tell you that the bar for doing so, though, of course, is very, very high. If you read those leadership principles, I to me, they're a little bit akin to when I got married and my wife and I said, oh, let's write our own vows. And then I read carefully sort of the standard vows. And then I sought to sort of write my own. And I realized after about an hour and a half of doing so, why the standard vows were the standard vows. Because they had endured for a few millennia. And there was good reason for this, because they were concise, complete, and I couldn't do better if I tried. And so it's not easy for someone to come up with a new principle. Now, that said, they have been malleable over time. There were 10 for a long time. The company added 4 more. It does speak to the fact that, yes, the company is always open to growth and innovation, but it's a high, high bar at Amazon to be able to raise the bar from where it is.
One of the most interesting anecdotes in the book for me was the way that an interaction between Steve Jobs and Jeff Bezos influenced the direction of your career, Bill. And we're going to talk about that coming up next. You're listening to GeekWire. Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop. It's a special episode of the GeekWire podcast. We're talking with Bill Carr. He is the co-author with Colin Breyer of the new book, Working Backwards, Insights, Stories, and Secrets from Inside Amazon. Highly recommended for anyone who really wants to know how things work inside the company. Bill, I learned even just nitty gritty stuff. Like, I struggle, for example, with reference calls, and there are 2 recommended questions in here for people who call references of prospective employees. Essentially, would you hire this person again? And where does this person rank in terms of a percentage basis among those who've worked for you? I got to say, I know we don't need to dive into that, but just as an illustration of how useful this is, it's not a conceptual book. It obviously gets into the concepts, but some business books can be so abstract that they make you feel good, but you walk away not actually being able to do anything. And I appreciated the mix that you had here. But let's jump into this anecdote of Steve Jobs. He and Jeff Bezos and some of Amazon's senior leaders met right when Apple was about to introduce iTunes for Windows. And Steve Jobs, as you write in the book, said to Jeff Bezos, Amazon has a decent chance of being the last place to buy CDs. Tell us the story of how that influenced your career.
Yeah. Well, so this meeting took place in late 2003, and it was the iPod had almost reached 1 million units sold at that point, but it was, you know, still relatively new. Napster was already quite popular. Millions of people were already sharing songs. But yes, it was right before Steve was about to, and Apple were about to release their Windows app. And Steve made this observation, since at that point, you know, we were not in the digital media business and Apple really was the first to be commercially in the business. And we at that time happened to be the largest seller of media products online in the planet, but it just so happened that all those media products were physical. They were, you know, hardback books and CDs and DVDs and VHS tapes. And so he made the observation that, of course, over time, looking at the trends, the arc of what's going to happen as customers move to digital media, that over time, this will put local record stores, you know, out of business, which sadly has largely been true, but will mean that Amazon will still stand alone because, you know, they don't have to make this investment in having a separate storefront to sell CDs. And so it'll be the last place on the planet to buy CDs. He actually made the comment that you'll have a pretty good margin, which is an interesting observation too, because actually Apple is a very, very focused on sort of its profit margins, where Amazon was not. Jeff didn't really take the bait in this meeting. It didn't sort of bite on that because it was obviously so, it was kind of a backhanded compliment, obviously, to say, you know, you'll be the biggest dinosaur, the biggest and last dinosaur before that dies off too. But the notable part of the story is that, you know, after Jeff returned back to Seattle, what he didn't do was call every, you know, lieutenant into his office and, you know, scramble the jets and say, oh my gosh, you know, there's an imminent threat. This digital media thing is coming. We better, you know, let's act now. Let's do X and Y and Z. Let's go acquire a company. Let's go launch something. I want, you know, a plan right away. Instead, what he did was he focused on making a very specific organizational change, which was that he asked my then boss, Steve Kessel, to stop leading what was then the largest business in the company, the worldwide physical media business, books, music, CDs, DVDs, VHS tapes, which represented 77% of all of Amazon's revenue at that time, and said, you know, stop managing this big business that's, you know, all of our revenue, all of our profit, by the way, and I want you to go and take Bill with you and start figuring out how we're going to do digital media. And that was the mandate, was focused on, you know, we're going to start working on this. And then we spent many, many months of 2004. We didn't rush to buy our company. We didn't rush to launch something. The longer story is how we had a very methodical and considered effort to decide what should we build that would really delight customers and make a big difference. The first answer to that question turned out to be the Amazon Kindle.
And of course, that went on to include Amazon Prime Video, Amazon Studios, and other digital content businesses.
Yeah, the Echo, Fire TV, all kinds of, you know, devices and digital media businesses that are now globally very successful for the company.
And that illustrated two principles, one of them an official leadership principle, and that is leaders pay attention to competitors, but they obsess over customers. So when Jeff Bezos came back, he did not just jump in and, as you said, scramble to respond.
Right.
He gave it some thought and decided how to do it for Amazon's own interest, in the interest of customers.
Yeah, what we didn't make is the obvious thing would have been like to launch our iTunes and iPod clones immediately. And that is not what we did. We did have a small effort that I led in digital music that was a very small team that was working on how do we grow a digital music business until we have a big idea. But the big idea that we focused on primarily was the Amazon Kindle. It took several years actually before we could have breakthroughs and come up with what we thought were big ideas to have a successful digital music and digital video businesses that are now, you know, Amazon Music and Prime Video.
And the other principle that it illustrates is this notion of single-threaded leaders. And I want to mention Tom Ahlberg, the former Amazon board member and principal at Madrona Venture Group, reviewed Working Backwards, your book for GeekWire, and we'll publish that simultaneously with this podcast. And he calls out this notion of single-threaded leaders in that review as particularly important. In fact, he would choose that if he was forced as the one principle that he thinks is most important at Amazon, which I found really interesting. Tell us about single-threaded leaders and how that works.
Single-threaded leadership means that at Amazon, the organizing principle is that for any specific initiative, product, organization, to break things down into bite-sized chunks and to have a single leader of that product, of that area, of that technology, who owns it, you know, completely from end to end, and that everyone on their team is also single-threaded, focused on that one thing. And this was Amazon's solution to handling when we started to grow quickly in the early 2000s. We quickly ran into sort of bureaucratic issues when suddenly we didn't just have a book business, but we had books, we had music, we had electronics, toys, apparel, tools. I could go on and on and on. A lot, you know, we went from one category to several, and then all these different teams needing all kinds of different things and various technology groups wanting to do various things. The result was a big traffic jam where all the teams were sort of fighting for resources and different tech teams interacting with the other teams in ways that made it hard for them to get stuff done. And so most companies, when they encountered this problem, what they focus on is like how to improve collaboration, communication, and coordination. And they hire actually a lot of people whose jobs are specifically focused on coordination. And Amazon actually rejected that idea and in fact decided what we want to do is actually have less, how do we have less coordination? Because time spent coordinating is not time spent building and inventing on behalf of customers. And no one really loves spending time there coordinating. What they love to do is to go to build. And so we tried something initially called two pizza teams, where each group was small, meaning that you could feed the entire group with two pizzas, so 12 people or less, but they were focused on one thing. And then we tried to focus on making the work separable, and specifically from a technical point of view, separable as in APIs, meaning there's no overlap in the code. One group who owns the code wholly from end to end. And the interactions between teams are through APIs, not through communication and coordination. This evolved over time to this concept of the single-threaded leader. And really the principle is that you, for any initiative that you look at and you say, well, what is the scope and scale of this initiative? What are the skills necessary to lead it? And how do I have a person who's focused on that initiative and nothing else? And a great example of this was one of Amazon's most successful products today is Fulfillment by Amazon, or FBA. For those that don't know what that is, that's the program that enables Amazon's marketplace sellers to actually send their inventory, their items that they sell, into Amazon's fulfillment centers, where Amazon will handle the actual picking, packing, and shipping of those items for them, not only to Amazon for Amazon purchases, but when those items are sold really anywhere on the web. And this is a phenomenally successful program that's used by, you know, millions of merchants around the world. But this program was actually stalled inside the company for quite some time. It was, everyone thought it was a big idea, and it was called actually at that time self-service order fulfillment. And it kept coming up in every meeting, this project, SSOF, that it was, you know, well, what's the status of it? Well, you know, it's still yellow, or it's not ready to launch yet. And so it wasn't until Jeff Wilke, the now outgoing CEO of the consumer business of the company, took one of his senior most operations vice presidents, Tom Taylor, took him out of working on a huge job in worldwide operations and said, Tom, you are now single-threaded focused on owning SSOF. Go assemble the right team, figure out the right plan, and go launch it. And once Tom was on this product, within a matter of months, SOF launched. It was renamed FBA, and the rest is history. And I can give you 20 more examples like that. You know, my career was another example, along with my boss, Steve Kessel, where we were pulled off of Amazon's then biggest business to go focus on a business that didn't exist. And we could have instead said, well, we'll manage the digital media business inside our existing physical media business. But to quote Dave Limp, who's now the senior vice president of devices at Amazon, the best way to fail at inventing something is by making it somebody's part-time job. So if you really want to invent and build great new things, you need to actually have the right senior enough leader, depending on the scope and scale of the item, single-threaded focused on that and nothing else.
And Steve Kessel, who you mentioned, who was your boss during the digital media push, also went on to become a single-threaded leader on a very important initiative later in his career, which was the expansion into brick-and-mortar retail by Amazon.
That's right.
Bill, this is great. I recommend the book to anybody who wants to understand how Amazon really works behind the scenes. What would be the message you'd want to leave people with about Amazon? How should Amazon be looked at in the annals of history based on your experience with the company?
Rightfully so, people look at Amazon and they're impressed by the fact that it is such an innovative company. And they think about that in terms of its innovation, in terms of the products they have built. But what they don't really think about is the company being innovative in terms of the way it actually manages and operates. What I want people to take away is the company has been as innovative in that respect. And what we try to do is to pass on what are those management innovations that the company has developed. And I firmly believe that one of the biggest legacies of the company is likely to be their contribution to management science. And so Colin and I were hoping to codify that, simplify it, and pass it on to the world so that the next generation of business leaders can learn and grow from it.
Well, thanks for sharing some of the highlights here with us today, Bill.
Thank you, Todd. It was a pleasure to be on the show.
Bill Carr is the co-author with Colin Breyer of Working Backwards: Insights, Stories, and Secrets from Inside Amazon. It's available now on Amazon and wherever books are sold. Thank you for listening to GeekWire. Our podcast producer is Kurt Milton. Our theme music is by Daniel L.K. Caldwell. To see all of GeekWire's coverage of science, tech, business, and more, go to geekwire.com and sign up for our daily email newsletter to receive all of our stories. We'll be back this weekend with our regular weekly news roundup. Until then, I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop. Thanks for listening.